This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Since the day that Athens was awarded the 2004 Olympic Games, there have been those who wondered if the mascot would be an antacid. Stories of stadiums unbuilt, venues unroofed, streets torn up and never repaved, it looked at times more than a little like Boston's Big Dig. Throw in slow ticket sales, fears of terrorism, and festering drug scandals, and it's easy to see why so many hands were wrung. But the waiting is over, even if the worrying isn't. Tomorrow, athletes from a record 202 countries parade onto the grounds of the Athens Sports Complex, and yes, it is finished and ready. For the next 2 weeks, people everywhere get to watch the best single sporting event in the world. Later in the program, it's a year to the day since President Charles Taylor finally left Monrovia amidst the devastation of civil war, an update on Liberia. But first, we preview the Athens Olympics, from the sports to the scandals to the souvlaki. Is there a particular athlete from your sport or your hometown that you're following at these games? Or if you've competed in games past, call and tell us your thoughts on this year's events. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Athens, Greece, is Nikos Konstantaros, the editor of the English edition of the daily newspaper Kazimarini. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good evening.
What's the mood today in Athens?
Well, Athens is very excited. The people are very optimistic. We're living in a new city. We're playing host to the whole world, and we're very proud that we believe that we're giving them the best that anyone can offer when one plays host to the world.
You speak of living in a new city. Once all the paving was finished and the scaffolding torn down, I gather people were quite surprised at what they saw.
Well, we're so surprised. We're not quite sure where we are yet because it's filled up with the Olympic banners and preparations and people and Olympic lanes and Olympic signposts that we can't quite understand what our new home is going to look like when our guests have left. It's almost like we've moved into a better neighborhood and we're having the party before getting acquainted with the house.
A new neighborhood with new subway train lines and new highways.
Well, the highways are quite unique because we now have ring roads and major highways, and we can get from one end of the province of Attica, which hosts Athens, to the other in about half an hour. It used to take about 2 hours at times. So the city has opened up very much. We get to work much quicker. The subway has been extended greatly. We have a new tram. We have a new suburban railway. It's everything that Athens wanted but hadn't had.
We kept hearing through all of these stories of delays and worries that venues weren't going to be finished. The Greeks kept telling us, we have a genius for getting things done at the last minute. It looks like a Greek genius has come through.
Well, it has. I think it was a different experience to what we've had in the past. The Greeks have always had to cope with some crisis, with either a war or occupation or famine or natural disasters or great geopolitical earth-shattering events. And this time it was kind of, they selected such an earth-shattering event to come upon them. So when they had to sit down and plan it, it took a while before we kind of found our footing as to how to go about planning something as big as this. But there was the sense that when it comes down to finishing on time that we will sacrifice everything. We will sacrifice our free time, our health, our money. We will do anything to get it done on time because we've always had to make do.
So now the city is ready. The games are here. But is there lingering questions about how much the city and the country is going to reap and benefit from these games?
Well, that is the big debate, and because there was such a mad rush to get everything ready, it's very difficult to understand how much the games are costing in terms of costs that are tied completely to the games, how much it has cost us to build infrastructure projects that we should have built a long time ago, how much more it would have cost us if we hadn't built them in the rush that we did now. I'm a believer that it's great that we have the games. And it's great that the games forced us to build everything that we did right now, because if we delayed building these transport projects that are going to make us more productive, we would have lost a lot more productivity in the future, and we would have paid a lot more to build them at a later stage. So I'm happy that we've built them. Now, if they could have been built more cheaply, that's something else. But the thing is, we have what we have, and we will cope with what we have to cope with.
And now the world will be looking at Athens and, of course, several other locales across Greece for the next couple of weeks. If things go well, this is, you can't buy this kind of advertising.
No, you can't. And it's great. It's the spotlight is on us. But, you know, in Greece, we believe that we're the center of the world anyhow. And I think now that the world has come to us, we realize that we were not the center of the world because we can judge the difference. And I think that, now that we can show what we have, and we've also put on our best show, you know, we've risen in excellence so that we can meet the world on its own terms, that is something that will be a standard for us, both in the future for ourselves and the way the world will see us. It's seeing a good face right now. Of course, we've done everything we can to set the stage for the Olympics. From now on, the Olympics have their own momentum. And I think that if the athletes give their best and everything goes well, these will be memorable games because the dream that the Greeks had was that people would get the sense of the significance of the Olympics as an idea. And now that the mad rush to get everything ready is past us, that is really coming to the surface. You know, people are very moved and emotional about the fact that this is an idea that has existed for 2,500 years and more. And it's revived, and it was revived here, and it's come back to be dipped in this fountain of the genuine event again. And we feel that very strongly now that we're not worried about making fools of ourselves.
I can't leave you, though, without asking a question about the event that everybody worries about. Are people holding their breaths in fear of some terrible terrorist event?
People are aware of the danger, but I wouldn't say that they are sacrificing the significance of the event to that fear. Everything possible has been done. I don't want to sound like a government spokesman, but you know, using our imagination, we can see that everything that can be thought of has been thought of. No expense or resource has been spared in preparing for this. Also, we haven't had any signals, any sense that anything was prepared as an attack on the Games. So, you know, we know that there can't be guarantees for anything. It would be stupid to say that there are guarantees that nothing can happen. But there has been nothing alarming or any sense that we've left any gate open that we could be aware of. I think that the since September 11 and 2001, I think the effort that has gone into this has been unprecedented. At an international, multinational level, I mean, I can't imagine anything that could be done that hasn't been done from low-level at street-level intelligence to AWACS flying above the whole country.
Well, all of us wish you and Athens and the Games the best of luck.
Thank you very much. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. Nikos Konstantaros is the editor of the English edition of the paper Kazamarini, and he joined us from their offices in Athens. And with us now from NPR's new Mediterranean Bureau in sunny Athens, our correspondent Howard Berkus and correspondent Tom Goldman. And good to have you both back on the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Neil.
Before we get to the sports again, we do have to follow up on some of the less savory aspects. We just heard from Mr. Konstantaros about the security. Is the picture that rosy?
Well, it's still, I think, a work in progress. And I'll give you a really good example. 3 days ago, I noticed on the corner of the main press center, which is also where the Olympic Stadium is, the swimming pool, a number of major Olympic venues, a police officer with an automatic weapon. He was taking a cigarette break under an umbrella, and there was a table in front of him, and he placed his automatic weapon on the table, just sitting, and he leaned back in his chair taking his cigarette break, and this was on a very busy sidewalk, people going back and forth, not a very secure situation, it seemed. But since then, we have seen daily more fencing going up, more people, police on the streets, more soldiers on the street on that same street corner. Yesterday, there was a soldier with an automatic weapon ready to go. And there were today, for the first time, going through one of the screening areas, they swabbed my my bag for explosives, signs of explosives or gunpowder. So every day it gets ratcheted up. Fences are still being built. They're still pouring concrete for secure fences. NATO has just deployed its air and sea force already. The blimp that is surveilling the games with special electronic equipment is up in the sky. We see it. It's certainly in place. It's getting there. It gets a little tighter every day as we approach the opening ceremony on Friday.
And Neil, I should add that we shouldn't overlook the fact that we are 2 days away from the start of the games, and if we see what we interpret as holes in security today, by Friday, those could be closed up. I think it's a smaller version of what, perhaps, of what Athens has done in general, what your first guest was talking about, how they pulled a rabbit out of the hat, if you will, and you know, got the city ready. And I think plugs in holes may be filled even in the final 2 days.
Tom, our listeners will no doubt note that we've added the International Filing Center sound effects behind you for verisimilitude.
Yes, we did, just to make us sound official.
Okay, that's what's going on behind you. We do want to get to some of the other serious issues, but and of course, not to dismiss the idea that there's going to be some great sports going on. That's going to be the focus of our conversation. We want you all to join us, especially if there's somebody from a sport that you participate in or from your hometown who you're following particularly closely in these Olympic Games. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's begin with a call from St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. Jason joins us.
Yes. Hi. How are you today?
Very well, thanks.
Long-time listener. Really enjoy the program.
Thank you.
First time I've ever gotten through. I'm calling because I wanted to make a quick comment about a sport that you really don't hear very much about in the United States. It actually has much more of a following, especially in much of Europe, which is the various equestrian sports, specifically show jumping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hunter jumper trainer out here.
I run a jumper barn, and my own kids compete locally, and we do in the Caribbean competitions, and have been back to the States to compete in the industry for a long time. And in general, I find that the sport in the United States
tends to be, I suppose, under the rug.
I think he says equestrian sports tend to get swept under the rug, Tom Goldman. I think he's right. But this is an up-and-coming sport in the United States.
Jason, let me assure you, we are lifting up the rug here in Athens. My first two stories have to do with equestrian. I'm not going to give you too many details because we want you to tune into these stories, but we are going to give equestrian our attention. At this point, I haven't reported the story, and I can't tell you much about it, but in a few days, I'm hoping to be a minor expert in it. But it is one of the many, you know, there are 28 sports here, and there are so many that are overlooked, and this is the great opportunity we all have to check in with sports like equestrian.
And equestrian has that wonderful mixture of two kinds of athletes, the animal and the human, and that's part of what Tom will be focusing on in the stories that you'll hear in the coming days.
It is also, and I correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe it's the only event in which men and women compete as equals.
I was just going to mention that.
Absolutely, yeah. So another reason to enjoy it. Let me just tell you one thing that happened today. This actually doesn't have anything to do with equestrian, but it shows really how wonderful the Olympics are, because we had a guest in our office for an interview, a 33-year-old man named Lance Bade, who I'm assuming, other than the Bades, not many people have heard of him in the United States, but he's been an Olympian for since 1989, I think. He's on the shooting team. I think he does skeet and trap. And it was so interesting talking to him about his Olympic experiences and thinking that this guy is on the same team as Marion Jones and Allen Iverson of the basketball team, all these superstars. And, you know, so the sports run the entire gamut.
Jason, thanks very much for the call. We'll be
Thank
back
you.
With more from Howard Berkus and Tom Goldman after a short break. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. We're talking about the Olympic Games. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're previewing the Athens Olympics with NPR correspondents Tom Goldman and Howard Berkus in Athens. Of course, you're invited to join us. Is there an Olympic story or an overlooked athlete you'd like to mention? Our number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's talk with Jillian, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am... called in because I had read an article a few days ago on the plane about a woman who is 35 who will be competing in the triathlon this year and favored to win. And I did my first triathlon this year at the age of 30 and was really thrilled to hear that this is actually a very competitive age for people to participate in sports. So I'll be watching that very closely this year.
Which one of you is daring to bring up the triathlon question?
That would be Tom.
Okay.
Would that be Barb Lindquist, I believe, Jillian, who you were reading about? Yeah.
She was favored about 8 years ago, I guess, her first trial. She's favored this year again.
It's an amazing story, and we've actually noted that there have been a few athletes. I mean, there's generally a youth movement in Olympics, but there have been a few athletes of note. One of them, we were just talking to Jason about equestrian, who I'm planning on talking to, a woman who's going to turn 50 in the discipline of dressage, and she's considered a medal contender in equestrian, and 52-year-old pistol shooter Libby Callahan, and I believe there's also a 48-year-old man involved in equestrian as well, middle-aged and young are represented here.
Be careful there, Tom.
Those middle-aged athletes are getting younger every year, aren't they, Tom? Jillian, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. One of the premier events at any Olympics is the marathon. And, of course, in the Athens Olympics, the marathon runners begin in marathon, and Tom Goldman, I think they follow the route that Pheidippides took when he brought the news of victory from the battlefield at Marathon to the Athenians.
And allegedly dropped dead after he did that, and there are some sick jokes going around that the winner may do that again here because the heat is so intense. They're planning on running the marathon, I believe, starting at 6 p.m., it's hot at 6 p.m. in Athens. But yes, it will be a very memorable, very emotional event and on the same route. And I believe they have finished the marathon course.
Finally, they finished it.
And they're ready to go. One of the many links you're going to be hearing to antiquity here at these games.
Howard, speaking of some more recent events, there's a separate issue this year at the Olympic Games. It goes back to something that you covered in Salt Lake City for many years. New charges of corruption amongst officials at the IOC. Can you tell us what you know?
Well, what's interesting about these new charges of corruption are not so much the charges themselves, but how the International Olympic Committee is responding to those. And something extraordinary took place today. The entire International Olympic Committee, all the members, 100-plus members, were gathered essentially in a room here in a hotel in Athens, and they sat down and they watched a movie, and the movie was a BBC documentary, which has in it an IOC member apparently describing how to buy the votes of IOC members in the bidding process that cities who want to host the games engage in. And, of course, that's part of what happened in Salt Lake City. What's extraordinary is that reports about this kind of corruption have been in the media since at least 1988, if not before then. And the way the IOC used to respond to those things was to say, oh, these are just rumors, this is not proof, and they would not investigate, no matter what was said in the media about these things. And now you have, in Salt Lake City, there was resistance to do anything about that until the outrage became so high. Now you have a situation in which an IOC member is accused in this documentary of doing something. He's already been suspended. That happened a couple of days ago. The entire membership of the IOC, instead of just dismissing it, they're sitting down and watching the documentary to see how this man behaved. And this is really an extraordinary shift. And it's due, I think, to the new president, relatively new president of the IOC, Jacques Roga, who said the other day, we have a zero tolerance policy towards corruption. And so far here in Athens, we have one member who's been suspended, another who's been ejected. This really is a new face for the IOC.
Tom, here's an email question for you from Josh in St. Louis, Missouri. After this year's surprise in the Euro Championships, is the Greek soccer team expected to do well in the Olympics, or is the jig up and will the other countries be ready?
Well, you know, to the Greek fans, I don't know if it matters. They're just going to go nuts for this team anyway. I'm really not in the predicting business, but
and of course, you know, we're talking about men's soccer here.
Men's soccer, of course. Yes, the Greek women's soccer team is off to an ignominious start. They lost today to the great United States team, which we can certainly talk about, the Mia Hamm and Brandi Chastain and Julie Foudy-led U.S. team. They lost 3-0, and today, actually, the Olympics began today with the soccer tournaments. So I'm dodging that question on the Greek men's team. It would be unbelievable if they could repeat what they did in the European Championships. But already, I mean, a lot of Greeks are saying what happened in the European Championships, which was just stunning, is some sort of wonderful portent for how these games are going to go, even if the team itself doesn't win the competition.
And you know, remember too, there's a history of Greek surprises in Olympics. In the first modern games in 1896, the winner of the marathon was a Greek runner. The stadium is filled with people. Somebody comes in advance to announce that he's coming into the stadium. The crowd goes wild. It wasn't really that expected. And in Sydney, we had a Greek sprinter, Kenteris.
Kenteris in the 200.
Get a gold medal. Not really expected. Again, a big shock. And now you have the hometown games, the hometown crowd. Who knows what kind of inspiration can occur in these athletes?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk now with Tom. And Tom's on the line with us from Laramie, Wyoming.
Hey there. How are you guys today?
Very good. Thanks.
Hi, Tom.
Well, I'm on my way to Athens today.
All right.
I had a swimmer. When I coached the swim team at the University of Wyoming, and he made the U.S. Olympic team in the 200 breaststroke, and he's been gone pretty much since July 18th, right after he made the team. They went to Stanford, and then they went to Athens.
Who's the swimmer, Tom?
Yes.
Who is he?
Who is?
His name's Scott Usher, and he's ranked fourth in the world right now, and hoping to bring home a medal to little old Laramie, Wyoming. So,
And it's going to be a long flight, but I hope it's a rewarding one, Tom.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've my wife's Greek and her family's Greek, and she's kind of disappointed because she's not going. But we're looking forward to it. It's going to be an adventure. He's over there now. He said he's been in the village, and he says it's beautiful, and people have been great to him, and he's really looking forward to it. So
maybe now's an opportunity to talk about swimming, Neil.
Go ahead, Tom. And Tom, the other Tom in Laramie, thanks for the call. Have a great trip.
You're welcome. You have a great day.
Bye-bye.
This is, of course, swimming, of course, is one of the marquee events at the Olympics. And seeing that track and field is under a bit of a doping cloud now, this may be thrust into the prime limelight. And what people are looking at and talking a lot about is this great rivalry between Australia and the USA, kind of like the Celtics and the Lakers for people who only know American professional sports. And that rivalry will be certainly be in evidence when the men's 200-meter freestyle happens, and that's going to pit Australian Ian Thorpe, nicknamed the Torpedo, against Michael Phelps, who's this emerging star from the United States, the man at least in the U.S. who's going to be the face of these Olympics, a guy who they say could win 8 gold medals, which would break Mark Spitz's record from 1972 of 7 gold medals. But I should say that Michael Phelps is being quite diplomatic. Today the swimmers held a news conference, and he said he'll be happy to just win one, which I don't really believe.
Well, let's talk now with Kimberly. Kimberly is calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a cousin who is on the Olympic judo team for, I believe, the third time. He was kind of short-lived the first time through, but he's very fired up about being on the team again, and we're just proud of him here in Kalamazoo, and we're hoping that he's going to do well. And I think judo is one of those other sports that you just don't hear a whole lot about or know much about, so it's kind of neat to see a sport being put out there and people can learn about it and support something that's a little bit different.
What's your cousin's name, Kimberly?
His name is Martin Boonzaer.
And this is his third Olympic Games?
He's a two-time Olympic team member, and he's been on the world team and national champion, and he's really great because you hear a lot about like you said, about the drug kind of fog that's over the Olympic Village with the different sports, and he really believes in natural bodybuilding. And
if he's your cousin, you must know the kind of dedication that somebody not in one of the big time and certainly not one of the big money sports has to go through to represent his country at the Olympic Games.
Yeah, you know, he has had to put a lot of time and energy into what he's doing. And you know, his family supports him and comes from a very large family. So people just have supported him and encouraged him and really got behind him and his dreams. And so it's just neat to be able to see him go off and represent our country. And he's just a humble guy, and I know that he'll be a good representative for our country, for anyone who he meets over there. So.
Well, Kimberly, we'll all hear your cheers.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tom Goldman, Kimberly mentioned it. It seems almost every day a couple of athletes are disqualified for using illegal substances, drugs. What's been going on with the developing story? This time, more and more American athletes are being caught up.
Well, yes, and actually that's a bit of old news. This week alone, we've had a number of athletes kicked out of the games for testing positive for illegal performance-enhancing drugs. Just on Monday, it was a veritable United Nations of doping violations. You had a Spanish canoeist, a Swiss cyclist, an Irish distance runner, and two Greek-Americans on the Greek baseball team who were kicked out of the games for various violations. And Tuesday, you had a Kenyan boxer who was kicked out. He was the first to test positive actually in Athens, and that's kind of an interesting part of the story. This year, and why many anti-doping crusaders are saying that there will be a record number of athletes who test positive at these games, this is the first time that the International Olympic Committee is testing for the full range of banned drugs before the games and during the games. In the past, they only did it during the games, but they're doing it in the run-up to the games when the athletes are checking into the athlete's village, which is what happened to this athlete who was kicked out yesterday. This Kenyan boxer checked into the athlete's village last Friday. They tested him later in the afternoon. He tested positive, and he's going home.
Well, I guess this is a story we can't escape, and it's going to be around as long as sports are.
It's certainly going to pick up too when track and field, the usually the glamour event at the Olympics, begins the second week. Certainly, there will be a lot of articles and a lot of people talking about, well, here comes the American team. What's their situation? Mm-hmm. There's the Balco scandal that is kind of the backdrop to this whole thing, the Balco scandal that's been going on in the United States for over a year now. So it's not gonna go away. Jacques Roga, the International Olympic Committee president, and anti-doping crusaders say it may be some momentary bad PR, but also all the positive tests and expulsions from the games show that testers are catching up.
Well, and I should point out that. That cheating is as much a part of the Olympic Games as competition, and that early in the ancient Olympics, there were cheaters at that time. They actually erected statues to cheaters so that they would be embarrassed by being remembered in that way. So that's certainly no excuse for doping that takes place now, but cheating is part of the ancient history of the games as well.
Another tie-in between the ancients and the moderns.
And the moderns, absolutely.
Yeah. We're talking about the Athens Games with NPR correspondents Tom Goldman and Howard Berkus. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. The Olympic flame has arrived in Athens at the port of Piraeus on its way to the grand ceremonies there. And Howard, you mentioned the ancient games. These, of course, are the Athens games, but is anything happening in Olympia?
Well, in ancient Olympia, they're going to conduct the shot put competition in the ancient Olympic stadium that's there. It's pretty much in a condition like it was back in ancient times, which means there's not a big stadium that will accommodate millions or thousands of people. It's a small place, and. We were talking to some Greeks today who talked about how emotional it will be when that event takes place, that, again, it's the tie of ancient and modern, stepping back into history for Greeks This is, by the way, has been a theme for Greeks and the Olympics for some time. When the Olympics were revived in 1896, part of the reason for that at that time was to revive a sense of pride in Greeks, to overcome some other difficulties that were going on in the nation at that time, some financial difficulties and other problems.
Here's an email question from Mike in College Park, Maryland. Every Olympics features some non-medal exhibition sports which are being considered for full Olympic competition status, or sports which are popular in the host country but not found elsewhere. What are the exhibition sports at the Athens Games?
Mike, I'm afraid your two correspondents aren't up to snuff on that one.
Okay.
I'm not sure if there are any.
Yeah.
The idea of expanding the sports in the games is losing favor. The International Olympic Committee has been concerned about what they refer to as gigantism, which is this the size of the games. The $7+ billion it's costing here in Athens to stage the games. It's gotten so big. It's such a challenge for organizing committees. There are so many people, more than 21,000 credentialed media, that the idea of expanding with new sports is not something that the IOC is very much interested in anymore.
And perhaps as an indication of that, there's one new sport in the Olympics this year, and that's women's wrestling, which should be a really exciting sport. But my history isn't good enough to know what the average is of how many new sports they have, per Olympics. But it may be an indication of trying to slow the pace down.
And they have expanded some sports by incorporating women's competitions, but not adding necessarily completely new sports. That's something that they're trying to contain the size, not grow it.
Here's an email from Amy Grant in Portland, Oregon. I'm looking forward to hearing about the U.S. men's APEI team. That's fencing, of course. At least one of the fencers, Cody Mattern, is strongly dyslexic. Unfortunately, she writes, there's no television coverage for this event, probably because the U.S. team does not have a lock on the gold medal. Isn't it interesting that NBC seems to think that U.S. audiences are only interested in watching events in which the U.S. wins gold medals, perhaps a reflection of our instant gratification society? And I must say that her sentiments are reflected by other correspondents in terms of sports like team handball and other kinds of events which they think don't get enough coverage. We'll be back with more of your calls and emails on the Olympic Games when we come back from a short break. 800-989-8255, NPR, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A few minutes later in the program, we'll get an update 1 year after the departure of Charles Taylor from war-torn Liberia. But let's continue our conversation previewing this year's Olympic Games with NPR correspondents Tom Goldman and Howard Berkus, who are with us in Athens. And, well, let's get another caller on the line. This is Melissa. Melissa's calling from Kansas City.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. On behalf of Move Up Combat and Central High School in Kansas City, Missouri, we would want to give our best wishes to a track and field 200-meter dash Kansas City, Missouri star Muna Lee. We are wishing her well. She is an overlooked athlete, and we're just so excited about her representing U.S. In the 200-meter dash.
And did you go to high school with her or teach her in high school?
No, I didn't, but I have family members who did go to high school with Muna Lee, and she's just a really, really great person. She's very subtle. She's not very flashy, and so we're just really wishing her well.
Okay. We wish her well, too, Melissa, and we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Tom Goldman, we've gotten a lot of calls from people who are complaining about that their sport gets lack of coverage, that NBC focuses only on Americans and only on Americans likely to win.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to respond to Amy who called before the break, who was talking about one of these sports, fencing, that doesn't get that.
That was an email.
Excuse me. I want to ask her and the others who you just mentioned in your question to have some faith this time, because it's actually potentially exciting what NBC is doing this time. They're going to have 24-hour coverage on NBC and its affiliated networks that many of you will get on cable, MSNBC, CNBC, Bravo, and USA Network. 24 hours, which certainly is going to, you know, that means there are going to be more of the profiles that a lot of people kind of get tired of. But there's also going to be a lot more coverage, and NBC is talking about giving all the sports coverage. Now, it may be at 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning where you are, but this is going to happen. They tried this before in 1992 with what was called the Triple Cast. It failed largely because it was a pay-per-view situation and people just didn't want to shell out the money. This time, you're a cable subscriber, so you are paying for that, but you'll be able to see all of the sports. You just have to know when to tune in. So it could be a very exciting thing, and you can see the Olympics potentially the way people in the rest of the world do. I remember my first Olympics in 1992. I had the treat of watching the Olympics on Eurosport, which is Europe's version of ESPN, and it was amazing. I would see the event from start to finish with very little interruption from the commentators, and you let the innate drama of the athletic event build, and you could get into it. And every time I come back from the Olympics, it's one of the common complaints of people. We never see the events. This time, you may really have a chance.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. Sue is with us from Shorewood, Wisconsin.
Hi, such an interesting program.
Thank you.
I'm forgetting that I'm waiting to talk. My nephew, Ben Holbrook, is a rower. And he is in the Olympics. He's going to be in the quadruple scull. And his wife, Donica Harris Holbrook, is also at the Olympics. And she is also in the quadruple scull.
And you're looking forward to seeing them on television, I think?
Well, I hope so, yes. The coverage, it sounds like we should be able to.
Might have to stay up a little late.
Might have to stay up a little late. They're getting lots of other coverage there in Vanity Fair magazine this month. They're going to be in the New York Times, I think because they're married. But it's very exciting. And lots of family members are going to be there. And Ben started rowing when he was at Brown University. He was just a walk-on. And he graduated, I think, in 97. So he's rowed most of the time since then, stopped for a little while. Met Danica out in California. They got together, they both went back into rowing, and this was going to be their last shot, whatever happened. They were not going to continue rowing the rest of their lives, so that they're there, we're just so excited.
Tom Goldman, you taking notes?
We're getting great story ideas here, Neil.
Sue, thank you.
We really are.
Thank you so much for the call, and we wish them luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. And Tom Goldman and Howard Berkus, we thank you for your time today. Good luck covering the games, and we'll be hearing from you on all of NPR's news programs.
You're welcome, Neil.
Okay. You're welcome.
Even though this summer's games are returning to their ancient source, the opening ceremony will have a distinctly modern sound. For the first time ever, the parade of athletes, thousands strong, will enter the stadium to the rhythms of the world's top-ranked DJ. Sure beats hooking up a CD player to the PA system. The performer DJ Tiesto joins us now from a resort outside of Athens. Good of you to join us tonight.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about the selection you'll be playing at the ceremonies tomorrow night.
I was approached by the committee last year, and they wanted me to write a few songs for the opening ceremony. They wanted to be more danceable and for the young sporters. So I made a remix of an old Greek track, and I remixed some classical work like the one you just played, the Adagio for Strings.
Uh-huh. The opening ceremonies, of course, are Friday night, but are you getting warmed up now?
Actually, I already did four rehearsals, and it was really funny to see, because the first rehearsal was for all the people who worked on the Olympics, and they already really liked it. And then last night we did the grand rehearsal for 70,000 people, and the Greeks really liked the music during the parade. So, it looks really good.
Nevertheless, when the big moment comes, the whole world is going to be watching. You're going to be nervous?
Definitely. I'm going to be nervous. I mean, for me, this is the biggest opportunity to play my music for more than 4 billion people. So, it's amazing. Mm. And I will be on air during the whole parade. So that's more than 1.5 hours. So that's, for me, it's great as a musician.
Those of us who don't follow electronic music much may still think of DJs as people who put records on the turntable. Aren't you very involved? You write this music.
Yeah, well, that's why I am a DJ, but I'm also the artist behind. I used to be a DJ who plays somebody else's records, but nowadays I'm still a DJ, but I play my own records, which I produced before in the studio, because to play my music live is very difficult with the technology we have nowadays. So it's not ready yet to put my music out live. That's why I record it on CDR or on vinyl and then play it out.
So you'll be there playing some of it live and some of it on recording?
Yeah. Some of it will be live, some will be on recording. But it will be just my own music.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be only instrumental music because I couldn't use any vocals because then some countries can be insulted or take things the wrong way. So that's why I only am allowed to play instrumental music.
But do you play, when the French team marches in, do you play some variation on The Last Time I Saw Paris or something?
No, they want to be. They didn't want to give any countries, something. It has to be all in. How do you say that? It has to be all very flat. You know, I mean, good music, but not any country, any preferable sounds. So
got to be neutral.
It's got to be neutral. So I could use some Brazilian drums, but not when the Brazilian team comes in. It has to be like for everybody. It has to be one party for all the athletes in the whole world.
Once the big event, your big event, is over, I guess you get to watch some of the Olympic Games. What sport are you interested in?
Well, actually, I'm very interested in swimming because the Dutch are pretty good in swimming. So, and it's always good to see your own team. So I can support my own team. So I'm going to see those games on Monday.
Well, we wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, thanks.
And good luck in the opening ceremonies.
Okay, thank you very much.
DJ Tiësto will perform at the opening ceremonies of the Athens Olympic Games. DJ Magazine has ranked him the world's top DJ for the past 2 years.